Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Jillian Scott. Jillian is a certified trauma-informed life and health coach and creator of the Hungry for Love podcast. She specializes in empowering clients to overcome the aftermath of emotionally abusive relationships, heal their relationships with food and body, and develop unwavering self-confidence and self-belief. Jillian, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm excited to have you on the program today.
Thank you so much, Dave. I'm so excited to be here.
We got to give a shout out. It seems like I've been doing this regularly lately to Chris Pomone. Chris was the person who introduced us. I believe you were on his Empowered Grief Journey podcast.
Yes, correct.
We had a pre-chat and voila, we find ourselves here today recording an episode. So this is great to have you.
The first time we connected, it was back in the summer. We're now recording and it's early December. So it's been several months. And even just to see how much life has changed over in the span of less than 6 months, but yet such profound changes and shifts. And that's part of what this is all about, right? Is embracing the change and leaning into it. And I'm so excited to just be able to talk more with you.
Yeah, I'm excited for the conversation. You're right. I mean, you know, people have asked me about my ongoing transformation after trauma. And I tell them very simply, it's going to continue until I dance in another dimension. I mean,
right?
You know, sometimes my growth is so profound that I don't recognize who I was the day before yesterday. I mean, that's literally how drastic it can be. But as long as we're open to it, it's exciting because I love seeing how we evolve through our own tragedies and also through the inspiration of other individuals that we work with. I know you work with a lot of individuals experiencing trauma, difficult relationships with food, and it sounds like that keeps you busy on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, and it's also been such a blessing because I feel like that's why God put me on this earth, is to really take my experiences with food and relationships and body image, really my relationship with myself, and to look at what have I learned, what have been the growing pains and the painful experiences, and really to turn that pain into purpose and to do something productive and meaningful with it and to bring some awareness and insight to other people so that they can also get to the same level of healing and awareness and compassion for themselves.
I think regardless of the path that our lives take, our challenges inform us as to the type of person we can choose to grow into. And also what we've learned from our challenges, I almost feel now it's almost an obligation for us to pass that on to other people to help them transcend their own challenges. So speaking of your experiences, what have been the experiences that have shaped your life path and passions today that have gotten you to the point where you are working as a trauma certified life and weight loss coach? So tell us about your own personal journey.
Yes. So my first awareness and epiphany was recognizing in my early 30s that I had spent the previous 14 years as a binge eater and emotional eater. And there were ups and downs to that. There were some periods, some months, some seasons where I was binging every day. There would be some seasons where it was maybe just overeating, where it wasn't quite as much food. But there was this deep realization that I had a really unhealthy relationship with food. I was always trying to lose weight, terrified of gaining weight, had a really unhealthy relationship with exercise and my body. And I knew something had to change. I knew things had to be different. And so I was working as a nanny full-time in DC for this really wealthy family. and not necessarily loving the job, feeling like there was more that I could be doing with my life, but also knowing that this was just where God had me at the time, and starting to wake up and noticing like I'm overeating, I'm emotionally eating every single day, and I can't seem to stop. I don't know why. And so as I started to think about other friends, other people in my life, I noticed that they could have one or two cookies and then leave the rest in the bag. It didn't tempt them. It didn't call their name. They weren't secretly eating six in their room at night. You know, like it was just noticing this stark contrast of how they thought about food. And I was just constantly thinking about and obsessed with food and when I was eating and when I could eat. And was I following the right food rules? And so this really put me on my own journey of exploration and awareness around, how do I create this healthier dynamic with food and my body? And I realized that I had a passion for helping other people. I wanted to help others lose weight, but I also felt like a bit of a fraud. I was eating ice cream every night. I was still eating chocolate and I still had cravings. And I didn't want to live in a world without pasta and burgers and wine. And yet I also felt like whatever I was doing, while I kind of looked good on the outside, I was at war on the inside. I was at war with food. I was at war with my body. I would run, you know, 5-6 miles a day, nearly every day. And really, it was like I was trying to outrun my low self-esteem. I was trying to outrun the shame and the self-doubt and the things that I brought with me from years prior. And so there started this slow awakening as I started thinking about helping other people. I realized I better get it together with myself and really figure out this side of me that is wanting to lose weight or not really ever happy with where I'm at with my body, really changed this dynamic with food. And so I tried several programs that didn't work. I tried several coaching programs, courses, memberships, a lot of things that didn't work before I realized that there were some life coaching principles and philosophies that would really help me to make sense and understand how to navigate and better see the pattern of my emotional eating habit, because that's what it is. It's a pattern. So it's a habit that I learned, which meant it was a habit I could unlearn. And I kept that with me. And there was just this moment, the end of 2017, where I decided, come hell or high water, I didn't care how much money I spent. I didn't care how long it took. I was going to figure this out, because I hadn't always been like this. I think that was another thing I went back to, was I wasn't always this obsessed. I was always very body conscious and aware, but not obsessive with food. It wasn't that I could never eat carbs, but I was deathly terrified of them. And so it really started this path and this journey of awakening and awareness. And as I got into the coaching and the food and healing from the emotional eating, I then started to wake up to emotional abuse that had happened in my childhood, the emotional dysfunction and toxic relationship that I was in with my marriage. And it just was like these little stepping stones that one kind of built off of the other. And it really helped to have this starting point around food and body image. And so that's where it all started, was this great idea of like, I'm going to be a health coach and I'm going to help people live healthier, better lives. And also realizing I wanted to be a product of my product. I didn't want to just talk the talk. I wanted to make sure that I was walking it. There was definitely a level of authenticity I felt like I needed to uphold in myself first.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And, you know, I've talked to other individuals, you know, in my past life as an addictions counselor, where a lot of their addictions were always tied into some type of emotional trauma or tied to abuse, or they grew up in a dysfunctional family system which had unhealthy rules. And if those rules weren't changed, they would get into relationships that supported mm-hmm. those rules. So whether you're talking about food, whether you're talking about, you know, unhealthy relationships with food or legal or illegal substances, there's always some type of trauma attached to that. Mm-hmm. What are the causes of emotional eating? Is it more of internal triggers that are going on with us? Is it the external trauma that you've alluded to? Is it a combination of both? And does emotional eating look different depending on the individual that you're talking with?
Yeah, it does. And so one of the things that I realized was with emotional eating and with food, there's two different aspects we need to address. So one is going to be the desire for food in the moment. So it's the craving, the urge, the quick fix, because so often what's happened is our brain has learned that food creates a rapid, reliable, effective sense of relief. So we know if this situation is happening, if this circumstance is happening, food will make me feel better. Yeah. If I'm feeling these emotions or these sensations in my body, food will fix this. Food will calm me down. If I have these thoughts, food will help break me out of that spiral. And my view is that our thoughts are always driving our emotions and emotions then driving our action. So regardless of how logical we think we are all making emotional decisions. We are all taking action from emotions. Yeah. And so it's understanding that in the moment aspect of like, what do I do when I have, when the trigger comes up, when the urge is there, when the craving is there, that's one piece. And then there's this emotional undercurrent underneath it. So why am I reaching for food? Why do I feel this discomfort? What is really running underneath the surface? And I think of it like an undercurrent of emotion that we carry with us. And so when we've been in, especially when our childhood was full of emotional or verbal abuse, definitely if there was any physical or sexual abuse, it would also account for this. But I would say for many of us, we've experienced a lot of emotional and verbal abuse because that's how our parents learned. It's how their parents learned to parent. And so it's just this generational cycle that gets repeated. And so now we've got these emotions, and a lot of times shame was activated, and shame is how people could control us. When we feel the shame, we're now dysregulated. We are now easy to manipulate. It's easy for people to get us to do what they want us to do because we are just trying to avoid that feeling. And that's what I realized for me. My emotional eating wasn't about the day or how much hard traffic or, like the dog chewing on the floorboards. It was really this feeling of like, I should be further along in my life. I should be making more money. I shouldn't be dealing with these same struggles. I thought my husband loved me. Why is he treating me like this? Why is he saying these things? Why does he say that I make life so difficult? Right. And then it tapped on the abandonment wounds that I had and the fears around, I do make life difficult for other people. It was like reinforcing these fears and worries from childhood that I experienced. And the way that I think of trauma as well is it's not just what happens to us, it's what we make it mean.
Yeah.
So growing up without my biological dad, he wasn't there in the picture. He couldn't have done anything physically to me, but because he was removed and not a part of my life, I made that mean I'm a burden. I'm too much. I must also be not enough. Otherwise, he would be here. He wants nothing to do with me, right? A lot of the trauma stemmed from what I made a circumstance mean as a young kid, as a 6, 7, 8-year-old little kid. And so this is where we have to bring in this trauma awareness lens and recognize that we can have a lot of diet trauma, a lot of food trauma, just from past diets and chronic dieting and how that industry works. But we also have likely experienced a lot of trauma in our childhood without our parents maybe even realizing that's what was happening. And I think about my mom, where she thought she was taking the brunt of it for us. I don't think she realized the impact that staying married and in that relationship had on us at a young age.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for kids at 6, 7, or 8 years of age to engage in magical thinking where they think, geez, if I was a better child, if maybe I'd behave more, my parents wouldn't be at odds with each other. They would, they would see me as somebody who's lovable. And when in reality, it's the parents' difficulties that were contributing to the problem, not the child's presence that was contributing to it. And the other thing, you talked about beliefs and thoughts triggering emotions, and I agree with that. That's a standard principle that in addiction, we talk about cognitive behavioral therapy, where we talk about, let's talk about the belief that's reinforcing your feeling not good enough, or that's reinforcing your continued relapse into alcohol and other drugs. Let's talk about disputing that belief, modifying the beliefs, and see if the emotion that you had attached to the dysfunctional belief now becomes more manageable with a modified belief. And it's all connected. The other thing I think is the reinforcing properties that food have for us. I know, and I used to be a stress eater. About 2021, the 2021 was my year, was akin to 2017 for you. I just had to, I had to say I was like 50, 60 pounds overweight. My pants weren't fitting me anymore. I told my wife I got to do something. I went on Noom, which I like because it basically helps you kind of rethink your triggers about food. It helps you rethink your relationship with food through a cognitive behavioral therapy approach. So I ended up losing 70 pounds. I've kept it off. But for me, I know food was very reinforcing. Whenever I take a carb or a sweet or anything, a cookie or anything like that, it was like my brain felt really happy. And it was like the dopamine receptors were getting activated. Yeah. And so when I was stressed out again, I would automatically go back to where my brain was feeling good and I would repeat the process again. So essentially, I had to find different things to give me pleasure other than food and therefore break that unhealthy relationship that I had with food. The other thing was culture. I'm half Lebanese. And Jillian, if you came to my mother's house and it was just me, you, and another friend for dinner, she would have enough literally to fill two banquet tables. So either you ate until you were stuffed or you didn't come back or you had to eat something. So that was always reinforced with me as well as a cultural piece. But the problem was is that graduated into culturally irresponsible eating for me. It graduated into stress eating. It graduated into a lot of other different things just because of my own stuff that was going on. So
absolutely. Well, and I think too, like that's such a good point, right? We are a lot of us grow up with clean your plate. It came from grandparents, great grandparents who went through world wars, depressions, famines, like real issues, real trauma inducing challenges where food was not sustained, where we didn't know where our next food was coming from. We didn't know where the next meal was coming from. And yet now in today's society, we may not have as much of that, of that challenge. You know, and so really recognizing, you know, things like, oh, I don't want to waste the food. So I'm going to eat it. I'm going to overeat because I don't want to waste it without realizing we are wasting food when we overeat. Yeah. I'm wasting food in my body because it doesn't need it. And we show gratitude or we show our appreciation by eating more, or we show that the food was very tasty by going back for seconds. There can be a lot of cultural expectations, even with people here in the U.S. I've had many clients where, oh, grandma gave me the funny look because I didn't go back for seconds. And she was like, what? My food doesn't taste good. Go get some more. Right. And it is just that expectation. And especially around Thanksgiving, it's the one U.S. holiday where we are all expected to overeat and stuff ourselves with food. And it's so fascinating how this is such a culturally accepted thing to do, you know, and for some people it happens once a year. But when that's what we are used to doing, when food is the highlight and the primary source of our joy, it happens on a regular basis, multiple times a week, sometimes every single day. And the catalyst is really finding the joy, pleasure, excitement for your life outside of the food. So my take is we can enjoy our food. We should enjoy it. I think that's wonderful. But let's not make it the primary source. Let's not make it the main thing we're looking forward to. Just like alcohol, we don't want that glass of wine or that beer to be the primary thing we're looking forward to at the end of the day. There has to be something else there. And so often it's an incapacity or an inability to feel emotions, whether positive or negative. But I'd say I wrestled more with negative emotions and really having to allow even something like disappointment. I realized it with building this business too, just how afraid I was of feeling disappointed because the disappointment meant I failed. It would tap on my shame, like it always led to something deeper. Yeah. And so really better understanding yourself and these patterns and our emotional capacity is really what it's all about.
And absolutely. And also to be mindful of what we put into our bodies, how much we put into our bodies. And for me, what I've learned to do is if there's going to be a day where I'm going to deviate from my clean eating plan, I'm not going to worry about it. It's just something I'm going to plan. And then I'm just going to go back to my healthy lifestyle routine and plan that I have and just get back on. Because the other thing that I've discovered, and I used to do this myself, if I try dieting, one of the things about dieting, just the word itself is like it implies deprivation.
So yes.
And that's the other part of that.
Yeah.
And it's like also implies an all or nothing type of thing. So that when I used to go off of my diet, if I went off my diet one day, I said, screw it. I blew it.
Yep.
So I'm going to go back and I'm just going to start eating what I want again.
Yep.
And a lot of that was based on my own belief or my own attitudes about food and about my relationship with food. I wasn't quite ready to give that up. But the other part of that was, you know, having to rethink again, how do I want to view food? Do I want to view it as something, you know, do I want to eat to live? Or do I live to eat? That's the question that I had asked myself. So I decided I was going to eat to live.
Yeah. And that's such a powerful place to get to. And we can only get there when we've decided that life can be so much better and that we don't need the food to be that primary source of joy. We don't need it to meet our emotional needs, because that's essentially what's happening, is we are looking to food to meet my emotions, to make me feel happy, comforted, loved, appreciated, valued, relaxed, whatever it is. Food will do this, or alcohol might do it. And this is the connection between emotional eating and emotionally abusive relationships, is in these relationships, we are looking for another person now to meet your emotional needs. I stay in this dynamic. I stay with somebody who does not treat me well or doesn't talk kindly to me, because at some point they were meeting my needs. They were so loving and so doting and so caring. And now they've either withdrawn that, or now there's a negative interaction with them. But the thought is, we can get back to when they were really nice. We can get back to when they're meeting your emotional needs. And so it's easy to look at and to have a lot of judgment or criticism or shame towards people who either stay in these toxic patterns with other people, or dysfunctional patterns around food or alcohol. But really, it's like, that is simply how we learn to meet our emotional needs.
Yep.
And so often, this was the key that I noticed, was everyone who came to me for emotional eating had someone really narcissistic in their life, a parent, an in-law, a spouse or an ex-spouse. Sometimes it was an adult child. A lot of times there were multiple people. Sometimes it was a boss, a colleague. Usually there's not just one. I think of myself as being very empathic, very open to other people's emotions, very much a people pleaser. And a people pleaser and a narcissist go hand in hand. And so you better believe I found a lot of them in my life.
Go ahead. I was going to say, a narcissist and a people pleaser, that's a match made in dysfunctional heaven.
Yes. And I kept thinking, I can fix this. I can make this better. I can get us back to when things were really good, because at one point they were. At one point they were really good. Going through this, what was my second divorce, was so incredibly humbling, because at this point I had a son, I had a child, and not only was it now having a child, getting divorced, being a single mom, I had a lot of judgment prior to single women and single moms. And my thought was, you chose poorly. You chose to marry or to procreate with this terrible person. That's on you. And I didn't realize it. I couldn't see it at the time. And God is so good in some of these moments of having that wake up call, and for me to realize, oh, there's so much more compassion and understanding now for this dynamic, because they weren't always that way. They weren't always rude and disrespectful and mean and nasty. Sometimes they were so sweet and could meet your needs, and you could meet theirs. And the moment you stop pleasing, you stop meeting their needs, it becomes, you get a lot more tension, a lot more conflict, because you're now not playing by those rules anymore. And so I think it's very hard to stay in that type of dynamic. I don't know that it's healthy. I don't think you can heal in a situation that is unhealthy. If it's a toxic situation, I don't think you can pursue healing in that situation. I think you do need space. You need time apart.
You make a good point, too, is that you can't judge somebody for staying in a toxic relationship longer than we believe they should, because, you know, one, we're not walking in their shoes. And if they've come from toxicity, they're doing what they know, and they're functioning the best way that they know how at that particular point.
Yep, absolutely.
And you made a good point about, you know, our love can't fix anybody. And, you know, although we can try, we think, well, geez, if they see what a loving, compassionate, empathic person I am, they're going to change. Well, I've had students that have been in unhealthy relationships in the past. I tell them, all your love in the world isn't going to fix somebody that does not want to be fixed. So you have to make a decision in terms of how long are you going to play it out, or versus when are you going to empower yourself to take a stand and say, I'm going to walk away from a situation or a person that does not see my value, that no longer values me, and I'm going to move on to something that's going to align with who I am and give me joy.
Absolutely. And I think of it as, I didn't just set myself free with the divorce. I set my ex-husband free, because now he is free to pursue someone who wants something different. Because at the end of the day, we wanted different things out of life. We wanted to show up and to live our lives differently than the other person wanted for us. And like, I kept wanting him to be somebody that he wasn't, and he kept wanting me to be somebody that I wasn't. And now, 2 years later, he's remarried, and she seems like a very sweet woman. And I hope that they can create the marriage and the dynamic that they want. But at the end of the day, like, that's for him to get to decide what he wants to do with how he wants to do life, what he wants to keep recreating. And for me, I knew that that was not the life, that was not the marriage that I wanted. And that was a hard place to get to, especially as a Christian, to get to a place where I realized my dream marriage was not possible with the person I was married to at the time. Yeah. And I think this is where we have to insource our own self-authority and our own decision-making and trust our own beliefs, our relationship with God and what we feel like God and the Holy Spirit is calling us to do as well. Because other people, pastors' wives, they could give me all kinds of thoughts. They could be very, and some were very judgmental. Some were also very encouraging in yeah. terms of asking, what is God trying to teach you through this? And yeah. I think this is a profound, when we can truly answer that question of like, what is God trying to teach me? Whether I stay or whether I leave, what does God yeah. want for me here? And we could look at this with food and with alcohol as well, of like, what is God trying to teach me through this dynamic and recognizing what's going on with me in food, with me in my weight, with me in alcohol? What is the message? What is the gift? Because when we can start to see our trauma as a gift and a lesson and something for us to learn from and to level up, that's how we get to these new higher and greater levels. Like if we think of life as like a video game, you want to level up to higher levels, like you're going to go through some trauma and you've got to learn from it. And when you can take the learning out of it, rather than just feeling like, woe is me, life is so hard, this always happens to me, and kind of playing that victim card or blaming, because I did this too at the beginning of the divorce. It was very much, he's the problem. He's why I couldn't stay married. It's him. And then a year later it was, oh, yeah, no, it's me. Like, I have some issues. I have some things inside of me, some patterns that I had to break, because even after the divorce, I kept getting into dysfunctional relationships. Yeah. Yeah. And that now is, I get to own this. And what a gift, what a extremely painful gift that was, but a gift nonetheless.
You know, but the greatest awareness I can say this from my own experience, that I think we come to is through doing the messiest work possible, looking at our own pain. I think we learn more from our painful moments than perhaps you do from our joyful moments.
Right.
Because the pain is what, I think, transcending it is what defines us. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, and we can't, you know, transcending requires that we learn from trauma. And we can't transcend something that we can't learn from. We have to look at what's happened to us as being our greatest teacher to achieve our greatest moments and our greatest legacy. So you can't have the yin without the yang, Jillian.
Yes. Absolutely. And when we can see it that way too, right? When we can see life as 50-50, there are going to be some parts of life that feel really amazing, really incredible, and some parts that feel really hard, and not making that a problem, you know, and not making the grief and the pain and the heartache and the loss, and not making those things, or even uncertainty, right? Like, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And when we can learn how to hold belief for the positive things that we are creating through that uncertainty, that's what builds our grit and resilience.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, it's just, and I can see where food comes in with all of this. Food doesn't judge. Food is there to comfort us. Food is there to comfort us in our worst times.
Yep.
It doesn't judge. It doesn't keep score. It's always something that we can go to when we're feeling stressed, when we don't have any visible means of support, that becomes our support, that becomes our comfort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, 100%. And it's so readily available. We can get it at gas stations and convenience stores, grocery stores, and there's fast food, and now there's food delivery, and it's all around us. It's so easily accessible. A lot of it is very inexpensive, and it's one of those things where it is all around us, and we can take with us anywhere. And we learn that that's what helps us to feel better in those moments. And a lot of times it's typically wanting to get out of a negative emotion. And then sometimes it's also wanting to create a positive emotion. And so I've noticed a little bit of, more so maybe over drinking. I've started dating someone new. And so we'll go out to dinner, we'll have a drink, and then it'll be like, hey, right? Like, I don't want this night to end. I'm having so much fun. Let's go get another drink, you know? And it's like, oh, let's go to another place. And he and I have both talked about this of like, no, this is so much fun. We're having such a great time. And also now talking and collaborating on how do we also maintain certain boundaries and certain limits to ourselves when it comes to food or in particular now alcohol. And that is, I think, being able to have that self-awareness and then being able to talk through that, because we can be emotionally eating for positive reasons and we don't often think about it, but sometimes this is so much fun. We're having such a good time. Mm-hmm. We're celebrating a promotion. We're celebrating a holiday. We're celebrating not seeing somebody in so long, or like there can be positive reasons too. And so just being aware of that can be really helpful, right? Like yeah. The awareness is half the battle right there.
Well, and the other thing too, is not expecting perfection too, when you're trying to modify your lifestyle and modify yeah. your eating habits. Understand there's going to be times where you're going to eat more than mm-hmm. usual because it's a joyous occasion, or it's mm-hmm. just something simply that you want to do. And there's no shame in that, but plan for those moments. And then mm-hmm. just go back to doing what made you successful, doing healthy lifestyle mm-hmm. choices with food and exercise and everything else yeah. that goes along with that. So,
right.
Your podcast, Hungry for Love, I love that name. Tell me what inspired the creation of the podcast, what type of guests you have on, what the mission of the podcast is, what you want individuals to get from listening to your episodes. So I'm going to turn it over to you for the old podcast review.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. So yes, I originally called the podcast The Body You Crave Podcast. That's the name of my business. It's called Body You Crave, because really it's like we have cravings. There are things that we crave in life. And so I really played off of that sense of so often we're after the body, and yet the body doesn't mean a damn thing if you don't have a life that you love. And so it's really evolved since then. And so as I really explored this concept around what are we really hungry for? What are we starved for? And so often we are so hungry for love and praise and affection. And so often we are looking for that outside of ourselves. We are looking for somebody else to do that emotional heavy lifting for us. And sometimes it's simply because we didn't learn how to do that as a kid. Sometimes that's just how we were trained, and what we learned was I'm responsible for mom's emotions, so therefore she must be responsible for mine. And now I'm responsible for fixing it if it's not right, right? All those things. And so it really just stemmed out of this realization of emotional eating and emotionally abusive relationships are often two sides of the same coin. At the core, we have the same root challenge, is we have learned to abandon ourselves, give up our wants, our needs, and try to please somebody else. And because we have this internal wrestling and gnawing and like discontentment, we need to release that. We need to somehow fix it. And we turn to food, right? And so it's like, it's so often there's so much that gets wrapped up with our weight and our body image, whether you're a man or a woman. There's a lot around how you should look, your shape, your size, how much you should weigh. And we don't just weigh our bodies, we weigh our self-esteem and our self-confidence. We keep trying to outrun our low self-worth. We keep trying to outsource it. And that's really the core problem, is we have outsourced our worth. And now it is something outside of us that has to be earned and achieved. And so I try to achieve it with my body. I try to achieve it in certain relationships. I have to earn and prove things. And so it's this very complex dynamic, but I really love bringing these two things together to talk about under one podcast. And it was a little challenging at first because I got feedback from some people around, you need to pick one or the other. Either you talk about weight loss or you talk about relationships. And I'm like, no, but they're connected. And in the beginning, I didn't even fully know how. It was more like, right, it's more of like I'm experiencing it, I'm working with clients, but sometimes things come so naturally to me that I can't fully articulate why they're connected, but I know they are. And so it was that there were some growing pains with this and with this evolution, but it has really transformed over this year to where I talk about weight loss and emotional eating. And then I talk about willpower, and I talk about core wounds of narcissistic abuse and grief and relationship dynamics. I'm going to do a series on divorce and dating post-divorce. Now that I'm 40, so I'm dating in my 40s and it looks a little different. And just talking through it, explaining and sharing different ways to look at new concepts, new ideas, explaining this concept of people pleasing, even as it's about my responsibility for your emotions. It's not so much about always keeping you happy. It's that I am responsible for whatever emotions you're feeling. And knowing just how deeply ingrained that pattern can be when you grow up like that, and then you're in romantic relationships and friendships like that, and now you realize you have decades worth of this reinforcement, it's not realistic to think that that is just going to flip like a light switch. And so it's really bringing so much compassion and love to ourselves. So I have guests on to talk about trauma, divorce, and relationships. I'll have a personal trainer on. I'm excited to interview someone around men's coaching and how to help empower men to let go of boyish behaviors and really what does healthy masculinity look like. There has been, on some levels, an attack on men and masculinity. And I think we can see lots of dysfunction and toxic masculinity, but that's not all that exists. And there's still healthy masculinity that we need in the world. And so my goal with this podcast was I want to talk about all the shameful things that we often feel we need to hide. And I want to bring it out into the light. And a lot of it is I'm going to go first. I'm going to show you my scars, my wounds, my little underbelly, but I want to create a space where we can thrive because shame thrives in the darkness. It thrives in secret. And when we can take those shameful parts that we have about ourselves or about life, and we can now expose them and start to talk about them, you realize now it's not just you. And I think that is such a gift. And it's so freeing when we realize, like, oh my gosh, I thought I was the only one. And here are thousands of people now who experience the same thing. It's so encouraging because you're like, oh my gosh, like, I just thought it was me. I thought I was the only one struggling with this. And so it's really been, can I talk about and touch on some of these taboo topics? So next year, I'll be talking about sex and how do we have a healthy sexual relationship? And what is, you know, sexual dysfunction inside a Christian marriage, and just these different pieces where it's like we often don't want to talk about those sorts of things.
Taboo topics, if they're not talked about, they end up getting a life of their own, and they end up becoming overwhelming. They end up becoming just really overpowering to those individuals who do want to talk about them because of all the, well, you know, you can't talk about stuff that isn't related to happiness. But the bottom line, if we talk about taboo topics, it no longer has any power over us. The fear that we had about talking about us dissipates. You know, I tell my students, I teach a death, dying, and bereavement class. I said, we're in a death avoidant society. I mean, we're getting better, but we're still death avoidant. I said, after 15 weeks of this class, you're going to be more comfortable talking about death than most people in Western society are. You make a good point. If you want people to reveal their trauma to you and talk about their scars, you better be willing to put yourself out there. Because when I teach the death, dying, and bereavement course, they know my entire history of loss. Because if I want them to be comfortable talking about a topic that is taboo in this society, they need to see that I am. If they can't see that I am, I can't ask them to do something I'm unwilling to do.
Yes, 100%. I was at a business retreat one weekend and Marcus Lemonis came and was the keynote speaker at the very end. And that is how he started his presentation, was sharing parts of his story and being adopted and what he experienced, what he went through. And that was the key message that I took away. And gosh, it was almost 10 years ago now. And it was, as a leader, you go first. And you demonstrate that and you show up in that way and you create the space where it's now safe for others to share and to be open and to share things that maybe they've never shared with anyone else before. And that's what ends up happening with a lot of clients, is they feel the safety and the comfort being able to share things with me that they've never told anyone else before. And that's my hope, is that they have that space where they can talk about anything.
Yeah. And it's leadership from the front. It's leadership through example. And I think that's one of the most effective kinds of leadership. I'm not going to ask somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do myself.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Wow, that sounds, and you mentioned grief too. Grief and food, they kind of has a very strange relationship. In my early stages of grief, for several of my losses, and particularly the loss of my daughter over 22 years ago, you know, I basically I would do stress eating. I would, I would just eat to fill the stress,
fill the void,
deal with my emotions. I learned, eating was culturally reinforced for me, as I mentioned earlier. So that just became more magnified. And I didn't, and that was one of the ways that I comforted myself in early grief. But it took me until 2021, from 2003 to 2021, to figure out that I needed to do something different. But, it's never too late. It's never too late to learn.
Yes.
To learn new lifestyle choices. So
100%. Yep. I have had people in their 70s come and work with me. I had one client who was 79 going on 80 when she hired me. And she had said, I don't know how many years I have left on this earth, but I want to make them count. And I don't want to keep wrestling with food and my body and weight. And I don't want anything to hold me back. And I loved that. We are never too old to break habits, to break patterns, to grow, to create that awareness, and giving yourself that permission.
Absolutely. And for your 79-year-old client, I laud her. I'm 70 myself, so, and I can say I'm never too old to learn new tricks, to learn new experiences. And I'm glad at 79 she decided, hey, I'm going to take control of my life.
Yeah.
And you're right, it's never too late. And it just proves that age is just a number anyway, so.
Yep, totally.
Jillian, one of my last questions for you today is, and you've left our audience with quite a bit to think about, but if you're going to leave our audience with one ultimate takeaway, teaching, wisdom for today, what would that be?
One of my favorite quotes is, a smaller body does not fix a broken self-concept. And so often we keep trying to change our self-concept, which I see as our identity, how we think and view ourselves. We keep trying to change that by changing our body, changing our career, getting a bigger house, a newer car, changing our spouse or who we're with. And none of that changes and nothing lasts if we don't change how we see and view ourselves. And this is the core work that I do with people. And this is what I encourage people, whether you do it with me or you do it with somebody else, that is the goal, is to change how you show up in this world, how you are being in this world. When I change me at the core, fundamentally, it now becomes easier to create this ripple effect of change in other areas of life. But that is the core, is that level of self-love and self-trust and self-belief. And so often it's just been eroded over the years, but you can get it back. And when you really put the time and energy into that and you don't focus so much on the weight, the number, the body size, the clothes, the pant size, when we now focus on, I change who I am and it's no longer dependent on these external things, that's when lasting change can happen. Otherwise, you will always be at the mercy of the scale. You'll always be terrified of gaining the weight back. You'll always still be in fear of, well, what kind of food are they having at the potluck? Or if I start dating, am I going to attract another toxic person? And you don't ever learn how to trust yourself because you never fully explored and understood the pattern or healed from the trauma that you experienced.
Yeah.
And part of healing is, from what I see, is reestablishing that self-worth and that self-concept and redefining that.
Well, your comments reminded me of one of my favorite quotes from my favorite book on the afterlife of Billy Fingers. Everything we need is inside of us already. And if we can empower ourselves to go within and see that we have the capability, we have the tools, we have the wherewithal to create our own reality in conjunction with the universe, empowerment and, a self-fulfilling life is going to soon follow.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I totally agree. And I remind people of that often. Yes.
Yeah. I would take it. That's probably one of the core messages in your coaching practice as well, too. So
yes.
My last question for you, Jillian, and if people want to get in touch with you, contract for your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
So you can visit me online at bodyyoucrave.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Jillian S. Coaching, or listen to the Hungry for Love podcast. And that is one of the best resources out there and really such a great way to start to explore more of my philosophy, what I teach. Really, I'd say most people kind of can tell if I'm going to be a good fit for them or not in just a couple episodes. And then within each episode, there's also ways for how to get in touch, how to get free workshops, resources, downloads, as well as how to schedule a free consultation.
It sounds good. And I will make sure all of that information, your contact information, gets listed in the episode notes when our podcast goes live. So, Jillian, with that, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation today. I wish you happy holidays and prosperity for the upcoming year. And just thanks again for holding space for a great conversation today.
Yes, thank you, Dave, for having me. This was so amazing, and I'm so just grateful to be able to bring this concept and these topics to your audience. So thank you for having me, and happiest holidays to you as well.
Thank you. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.